Okay, good friends. Thank you so much for your practice, for creating this space of exploration. I haven't found something more powerful than this in my life, you know, in terms of transformation, understanding. And so I don't know where you stand at this point, you know, doing this. It might be in a different mind state, like, I have no idea why we are doing this. And so, you know, the range of mind states and kind of perceptions and views is wide open, you know. It's and we don't exactly get to choose, huh? Like, otherwise we would all say, like, okay, let's, you know, view this like he does right now, you know. And so, why am I saying this? I'm not actually sure. Expressing my gratitude for the existence of such forms, you know, and I think I'm really aware that this is made collectively, you know. The collective I have in mind is in deep time. I've talked about this, I think, on the first evening, you know, like, this is a collective effort that started a long time ago, you know, and is extending here now, and we're helping keep that kind of flame, if I use this image, alive, you know, and it might be useful for others later, you know, that these forms are still, we're keeping it alive. So we're doing it for ourselves, for the ones around us that might not practice, you know, so we can be easier to be with. And we're doing it for those who will come after in the same, you know, either through this organization or this lineage or, you know, something in relationship to what we kept alive here. The job of the teacher, I just, in the last hour I was trying to gather a few, mainly... Trying to think, like, what would be helpful here at this point, you know, for us, what would be helpful. So it's partly a guess, partly a construction of mind, you know, partly maybe coming from impressions from the meetings or from body language, you know, what I see, or maybe a way that I've been trained, you know. So it's interesting that this idea would come at this point. It always comes on the third day, you know. Oh, we should talk about this. So there is a conditioning in there too. But when there's always a moment, I think, or mostly always a moment before a talk, where at some point I stop and I'm like, Pascal, what is it that you want to convey? What is your task here? What is important? You know, using speech. What is of great importance here, you know? And so I'm going to reveal my underlying intentions here. So two things came very clearly to mind. Was the job of the teacher. There's many ways to answer this, but today, let's say, the job of the teacher is to today, I'll put it this way, the job of the teacher today is to convey how, what kind of attention we should bring and to what in order for wisdom to be cultivated or for healing to happen. And so these two points here, and I think they've been there the whole week from Jill and I, you know, how and what to attend to. And this formulation is definitely totally based on the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse of the Buddha, the teaching of the Buddha that is at the center of what we're doing here. So the establishment of mindfulness, what you pay attention to in order to develop wisdom and how. And these two are extremely important. And that's what we've been doing since the beginning here. And that's us, I mean, as teachers, but as practitioners, that's also what we're clarifying in action, you know. We could imagine that there is, hypothesis, there's always a tension. There's always a tension. But is it always of great quality? Is it always attending to what would be useful to attend to? Or does it get kind of stuck, fascinated, enamored with things that are not going to be helpful, although they seem like, if I keep thinking, retelling the same story, maybe it'll become a different story, you know, or whatever we do, you know. If I resent a little bit more, I might find, if I self-hate just a little bit more, there might be freedom there. You know, so what we attend to, what we give attention to, value to, and how we give it. And so that's why what we're trying to define here in experience, as we're sitting, as we're walking, as we're differing different things, where is the attention going? We're discovering this. Maybe that's what we're... Oh, the attention keeps going there, you know? Every time there's a moment of lack of kind of purpose or clarity, whoops, it goes right back in this area, that area, you know? And so we're doing this from the inside as practitioner. From the outside, we could say as teacher, we're trying to name these things to orient and guide. And so that's been what we've been doing since the beginning of the retreat, naming different, what is mindfulness, you know, and that, and I'm, comes to mind Jill's yesterday, like, honey, what was the phrase? You're like, it's not enough. So defining, no, but it's really important to define the how, you know, like, yeah, I'm attentive, I really hate this, I know I hate this, you know. Yeah, I really hate this, I really absolutely hate this, I know that, that's gone, that's done, you know. Well, no. You know, so that's the how, you know. How am I attentive? Is that, you know, that's a little superficial, habitual. Yes, you're attentive enough, that's usual, to know that you hate this, you know. Now, let's push it a little bit further, you know, and bring curiosity and calm and, yeah, great interest. What is the experience of not liking, you know? Do you see, like, kind of the depth here that it takes, you know? So the how, and then the what we attend to, you know, that's gradually very classic on a retreat. We're defining this almost day by day. We bring another aspect of experience to actually really tune in with careful attention. So experience of the senses, body, we name this, you know, body sitting, body sensitive, the sense door, the sense spheres, the sense windows, you know, saying, stay really close to this. We've been naming this at the point of contact, at the door of the sense. You know, we're suggesting, oh, we could not give so much attention to the construction, so much value to the ornamentations. You know, this, but stay really there where the sound hits, where you know, the heat is felt, rather than, oh, I wonder if the summer is going to be hot, you know. Stay right there. So we've been describing things like this. Certainly today, this morning, Jill took really good care, really carefully invited us to become aware of this experience of pleasure and displeasure and the particular tonality, you know, that there is in every experience. If this is particularly pleasant or slightly pleasant or extremely pleasant or slightly unpleasant, or, oh, can't tell, you know, like it doesn't stand out in this way, in the way of pleasure or displeasure. And she took care to you know, to guide us through the different experiences of bodily sensations, of scent. You know, I think you did taste, you did seeing, you did hearing, and then the mind door, you know, like a thought. Some thoughts are pleasant, others are unpleasant. Some emotions, that's the mind door. Some moods are pleasant, others are unpleasant. Can we actually tune in? When usually we miss this, we just form an opinion. People shouldn't, you know. Staying really close. Oh, unpleasant, unpleasant. That's the what we're attending to and how, with great interest, instead of being kind of captured by, oh, it's so beautiful. You know, the river, I don't know, the river, the grass, the name it. So I love it. Yes, we know that way to be, you know. Now can we dive in instead of being fascinated by the object of beauty? Can we dive in here and notice, wow, amazing how a human being is touched by beauty. You know, something, I don't know, trembles or, you know, vibrates or resonates with pleasantness, really. Or with unpleasantness, it shivers, or I don't know all these words in English, there's so many good ones. And so we learn to actually come here and feel the experience instead of being fascinated outwardly, you know. What's the experience here of, you know? And the what to attend to, Jill again, very skillfully. That's yesterday, I believe, or last month. Time and mindfulness, you know, is, you see it, the perception is like, this day never will end, you know. Wow, that went so quickly, you know. And so Jill invited us to become attentive to what? To the arising and passing of events, experience, phenomena. And so that's, again, in order to develop wisdom, to stay, to have an intimate relationship with appearance and disappearance. So this is the what we attend to. So we don't attend to things because we prefer them. Like, I'm going to attend to what I prefer. Or I'm going to give all my attention to what would be better here. So we're really reorganizing the way we attend and what we attend to, huh? Habitually, I would attend to it. It would be better like this. If it was unfolding like this inside of me or between us, or it would be much better, you know, and I'll spend a lot of attention on this. And here we say, no, let's attend to what is here rather than what should be or could be or was or will it be. And as we pay attention to it, let's be particularly interested in the appearance and disappearance of things. It's known, said by the wise, that it will be liberating to have a very intimate encounters, probably several encounters, ongoing encounters with the fluctuating, ephemeral, intermittent, dynamic nature of anything, the things that we named here, you know. And so we've named it, maybe not, maybe I'll name it again today in a different way or emphasize this, but so an aspect of experience that we want to pay close attention to, as you know, yeah, by now I think you know this, is the mind states. We want to pay attention to mind states, moods, emotions, qualities of mind. I put all this in the same kind of chapter rubric, yeah, that kind of event. So we want to become really intimate with this. And how? Not in a habitual way, being swayed by believing in adhering. Is that adhering to mind states, but being awake in mind states. It just crosses my mind this morning at some point for like, I don't know, 10 to 15 minutes. This mind became grumpy, kind of impatient, slightly impatient, grumpy, kind of, yeah, bad moodish, grumpy is the word I would use. And, you know, first I was, a couple of minutes, I think I was caught in it, you know, like, ah, oh, people, And then suddenly I realized, oh, grumpy. And then there was not mindfulness yet. It was just, I was aware, slightly aware, you know. And then it was more like, where does this come from? Who did what to put me in this mood? You know? Where did it start? Like, who's to blame here? Like, it certainly started with somebody, you know, doing something, you know. And then, you know, and then so that lasted a few seconds, you know. And then suddenly I was like, oh, hold on. I remember, you know, after 20 years of practice, there is a way to attend to this, you know? And suddenly there was like, oh, grumpy. Interest kicked in. Non-judgment, not swayed by, but interested in this phenomena. Oh, what a chance. Grumpy. Grumpy. And then I was there. Wow, grumpy, hold on. Where is it? Oh, I can feel it partly here in terms of its symptoms of in the body, the presence in the body. There's a grumpiness here. It was almost like I would say kind of a skin or just under the skin, but not kind of deep, but you know when you... I don't know if we... Is it in French or in English? We have a kind of a skin reaction to, you know. So it felt like this. It was like, oh yeah, it's very kind of like surfacey, you know, and then gutsy, you know. And there was also a kind of almost on an energetic level. I'm trying to put words on this. It's really hard, you know, or it's maybe not exact, you know. The words are not important. What's important is the interest in, you know. But there was a thing a little bit like this, like almost like if I had horns, you know. I was like, come at me, you know. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I'm like waiting for the affront. Is that, would that be a word? Like somebody to come and say something, and I would answer, you know. I was like, oh my God, you know, look at this energy. It's like I'm a little, you know, some kind of little, not bull, but more like, shh. What is a sheep with horns? You know? Yeah? Goat. I'm a goat. You know, when you see goats, you put your hand here and they go, you know, they like going like this. They like to relate like this, you know. And do you see what was cultivated in that? To me, you know, it makes us laugh. But it's also an amazing revolution of mine. I'm forever grateful for this because unknowingly, unconsciously, not being lucid, I could have developed a whole vision about people, retreatants, you. You know? And I don't know, it could have gone into schedule, or, you know, whatever, it could have latched on anything, you know. But then it was recognized, and then there was humor about it, interest. I don't know if I applied compassion, because it was not like kind of overwhelming that I could say, oh, poor Pascal, you're all overwhelmed by. But it was more like, it was that kind of attitude was not needed. But in that moment, I could see, and I was right there, I was grateful. I was like, I can't believe the luck I have, you know, to know these tools. Because many people don't know these tools. Many of us often don't know these tools, you know. We're actually developing these tools. So in that moment, there was, what was cultivated was curiosity, harmless for self and others, maybe playfulness because it was possible. We were not in the range of, afflictive, overwhelmed, any of this, But that was still, it was the practice. And it avoided further suffering for self and certainly for others, And so that's one way to describe like the attention we're invited to bring to moods and emotions and states of mind. And I wanted to go in the Satipatthana Sutta and look at this together at what's said around that foundation of mindfulness. So first foundation is body as it breathes, body as it, so what to attend to, body as it breathes, as it's standing in different posture and its activities while eating, while doing the mindful movement. So what to attend to the body as it's sensing stuff, what to attend to, second foundation. First is body, second foundation is the feeling tone. Pay particular attention to pleasure when it arises, pleasure when it's absent, pleasure, displeasure when it arises, when it's present, when it's absent. Neither pleasure nor displeasure. Really powerful to do this. So that's the second kind of area of attention the Buddha invites us to become aware of. And the third one, very classic, qualities of mind. So here is what the Buddha apparently said when he published his book. And how practitioners does the practitioner in regard to the mind abide contemplating the mind, or you could think mind states, qualities of minds. Here, the practitioner knows a lustful mind to be lustful, a mind without lust to be without lust. They know an angry mind to be angry, and a mind without anger to be without anger. The practitioner knows a deluded mind to be deluded, and a mind without delusion to be without delusion. She knows a contracted mind to be contracted, and a distracted mind to be distracted. She knows a great mind to be great, and a narrow mind to be narrow. He knows a surpassable mind to be surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind to be unsurpassable. The practitioner knows a concentrated mind to be concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind to be unconcentrated. They know a liberated mind to be liberated, and an unliberated mind to be unliberated. And here I'll add a little bit. Do you see the simplicity of this? So incredibly simple. What are the ornaments on this? I'm always like this, I've always been like this, I will always be like this, it's the fault of this one, it's the, if this didn't happen, and no ornaments. It's just concentrated, distracted. The simplicity of this is difficult. And I won't read the whole refrain, but this refrain is the how, and it's partly of the how. And this refrain, we call it the refrain because it's there with postures. It's the refrain that is there with breath. It's the how that is there with sense experience. It's the same how that is there with pleasure. It's the same how that is how to be mindful, how to be attentive with displeasure, with neutrality. So it finds its way in all the different aspects. And so here with the mind, it says Maybe I'll read the corrected version. No. It's because I want it to be applicable here. And so I look for, you know, a simpler version that contains everything. It's exact word, but I dropped, you know, some of the length of it. So about mind states this time, but it could apply to breath or pleasure or sounds, but mind states here. The practitioner abides contemplating the nature of arising and passing away in regard to mind states. So it focuses on the arising and passing away. It brings, you know, like Jill was pointing us to, notice when the grumpiness starts. Notice when it changes, you know. And here, again, this refrain, it comes many, many times in this teaching. Mindfulness that there is a mind state is established to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. The practitioner abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. I wish I didn't feel this. It's very natural. We understand this. Maybe it's not good the way I say it. It's maybe judgmental. You know, it's natural that it would. But mindfulness is not that. Mindfulness is, despair. Despair feels like this. Not easy, yet possible, you know. This is absolutely possible to develop a mind like this. Here we're creating the conditions to recognize this. And so, peaceful mind, quiet mind, mind free temporarily, maybe, but mind freed from desiring something else for a few moments here. So recognizing just enough mindfulness to know the state and to continue knowing the state and probably its fluctuation. Yeah. And so for me, this morning was, grumpy mind. No need to blame. No, in this approach, in another approach, you know, I would lay on the sofa and say, when I was a child, my mom used to, whatever parent used to tell me I suck. You know, it's very useful. It's another approach. It's good to know which approach we're developing. They can even go together. Oh my God, I can't believe I just said this. They can go together, not here. Because here we're really developing a particular tool. It's a very delicate tool. And in order to mix it with something else later, we need to know it really well, you know? It's like you're like, take the scissors and the clipper at the same time and do a nice haircut here, you know? You know, later you'll do the scissors. Now we're doing the clipper. I just came up with the image. It might be the last time it's heard. And so here, what we're trying to develop, we're not trying to fix everything. We're not fixing, we're developing a quality that we'll be able to apply later that will be helpful for us on the long run. Yeah. And so here we're discovering, so what are the words? Mindfulness that there is a mind, mindfulness that there is a body, mindfulness that there is a breath, mindfulness that there is pleasantness right now, is established to the extent necessary for bare knowledge, no ornaments, bare knowledge, not fixing things, not bare knowledge, and continuous mindfulness. It's very precise, huh? And so that's how, for me, it appears like, this is really research we're doing. So there's like, How do you use it in the world of science? There is a protocol, you know? Is that the way? Like, there is a way, this is the, you know? And I remember talking to... one time I arrived at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts, where there's like one of the hubs, you know, of mindfulness, of this lineage of insight. And there was a retreat, I think, was it for scientists or for neurologists? So there was something like 80 of them there. And I arrived, it was like 3 or 4 days in the retreat, and I went to lunch with the teachers. Joseph and others were there, Joseph Goldstein. And, you know, I said, so how's it going, you know? And they were all like, oh, we love it. We love working with scientists because you give them a protocol and they follow it. And then they report on it, you know? Except, like, half of them are neurotic, like all of us, you know. So they'll take a tangent anyway. Not to make, you know, scientists are made special enough, I think. But I liked hearing this, you know, of the teacher. They're like, wow, that's amazing. You say, let's study exactly this. And they study exactly. They hear the instruction. They do exactly this. Then they report on this, you know. So it's very satisfying for a teacher. And so that's why I'm trying here to describe as best possible, using the Buddha's words is probably the best way to go about it. Like, what is the actual technique, if we want to use that word, you know, is to actually tune in and really notice that. And of course, you know, like, if the emotion of the mind state is really strong, like strong sankhara conditioning, you know, that's its function. Its function is to take us away from the protocol. You know, like, let go of the protocol. I'm going to organize reality for you. You're a piece of shit, you know. And so it's, yeah, or whatever else, you know. Let's forget the protocol. You know better. You know, you do it your way, honey. You know, which is going in the woods. Enjoying the trees. Whatever it will be, of course it will do this, you know. And so, it's a dance, you know. But it's good here actually to state again what we're trying to do, at least, you know. Bare knowledge, you know. Bored to death, you know. Oh, bored to death feels like this, exactly like this. Can I actually stay there? And what is being developed in that moment? Really wholesome qualities of mind. Freedom, the freedom not to follow every mind state. You know, the capacity to be visited in this way. And so in mind states, staying around this here, then this aspect, what to be attentive to, in this aspect of experience of, it could be an afflictive mind state, or I enjoy these days reading Andrew Olensky, as I was telling you, and he's using a lot toxic mind states, which I find really interesting. It's good for the mind, you know, to encounter a different way of describing, you know, toxic mind states, you know, greed, kind of clinging, aversion, hatred, dismissal of what's happening, you know, other ways we get fascinated by our thoughts, you know. He describes it as toxic. It has a good, almost as an incentive in it to actually look, you know, be really careful with the use of these mind states, you know. And so so in being attentive to mind state, we could be attentive to pleasant, unpleasant mind states, difficult, you know, healthy, beautiful mind states. So there's many mind states. Some we would say appear more as in qualities in the mind, you know. Calm, the texture of calm, of this calm. And remembering, remembering the way you can or in the way I can right now. So remembering, okay, so there's some kind of calm here. What are the instructions? Just enough mindfulness, I'm going to say it the way I remember it now. Just enough mindfulness for bare knowledge and continuous knowing. Okay, so calm. So I don't have to do anything with it, you know? Just become aware of the experience of calm. Kind of seems like it's talking about the more intimate experience of calm. And I might discover the effects on the body. Where is it located? How is it felt? It's felt maybe as spaciousness. I'm putting words into it, but I'm interested in the felt sense, the experience. Kind of in the physical, maybe I would think in the material way, you know. What is the experience of calm? Is it just a mental experience, or is it, or annoyance, if you will, you know? What is annoyance? Annoyance, if it's there, annoyance. Oh, heart beating, you know, contraction, you know. In calm, because I was just talking about this, in calm there was a sense of physical space, you know, an awareness not just of the body, but almost as if, you know, the head was a little bit open, you know, like more kind of transparent or open. I'm doing this, that's a very personal description here, it doesn't have to feel like this for you. So it has the kind of aspects of spaciousness, maybe. And the taint, that's more in the ambiance, the atmosphere, I don't know how to say it in English, inside, the kind of tonality inwardly. It's like, oh, this particular kind of quietness or openness has the slightest little joy in it. It's not like exuberant joy or anything, it's just, you know, I don't have to have the right word, you know, it's, the important is the presence for it, you know. Oh, it's not so discursive, it doesn't have a lot to say, it's much more listening, so I'm discovering this as I'm staying here. As in annoyance, probably would have a lot more to say, you know. You know, an annoyance, there might be a kind of... I mean, sometimes I use these words because I've heard them a lot. I've never used them myself. Maybe, but the kind of churning, is that the word? Like a... You know. Okay, so it has that quality of churning. You know, annoyance. So I've become intimate with the thing. I'm not actually led by it. You know? And that's experiential investigation. I don't know if there were words I could discover the tonality of the speech in there, the thoughts. Do you follow? Like the charge. I can't believe, you know. Oh, sweet. You know, different tonality, different charge in the mind. I want to be aware of this. Depending on the mind states, I can see one thing that I like becoming aware of is the capacity for nuance that shrinks with different mind states, you know. In reactivity, nuances, not so much. Values of care and respect could easily fall off, you know, the window. Do you see what I'm... So, you know, oh, it's not just angry, it's also kind of mean, cruel, you know. It actually doesn't want to allow something that would include the beautiful side of the other, you know, or a wish for well-being for the other. Like, no, it's not in the field. I can see the mind doesn't want to allow, you know, yeah, but they also said that, you know, they said that I was a little harsh, but they also apologize after? No, they said that. You know, so dishonest, maybe. The mind might become dishonest. And in interest, we might discover this. Oh, look at this. It's actually as, you know, in French we would say de mauvaise foi. Like it's as ill will, is that like bad faith? It's actually meaning to make it worst, you know. Oh, so if it's there in that moment, I actually want to see how the mind behaves. I just don't want to be fused with the thoughts, you know, believe in them. And so there's a lot of, you know, I don't want to analyze. I just want to be there. It's a little bit like if I'm a biologist, you know, and I'm in the bush. And I'm studying whatever animal. You know, I don't want to go mess around with them. I just want to let them behave and notice, oh, that's what they do. They fight. Oh, they're not fighting. They're actually playing. Oh, they play until the sun comes down. Then they do, you know. So I stay around. I'm like, oh, it's really, it has a meanness. Oh. It has meanness in it. It's mean. This mind state is mean. You know, I stay aware. You know? And one aspect of what I'm describing in that Dhamma Vichaya, Jill talked about this, the investigation of phenomena, tried to point at it a couple of days ago. Do you see that when we're doing this, it's not personal? Huh? I'm not like, oh my God, I'm mean. Oh my God, I'm so mean. You know, that would make everything so complex. The selfing in there is definitely a hindrance. You know, if it means something about me, we're in deep shit. Forget mindfulness. You know, it's going to be really hard. And so we're studying phenomena. Oh, there is meanness here. It's not I'm mean, you know. Oh, there's generosity here. I'm so generous. No, it's not like this. It's, oh, the mind opens up. It cares for the other. Oh, it, suddenly there's integrity. And a little bit more quiet, and whoops, there's something that can speak that was not heard before. I should be like this. I should say yes. They ask me, I should say yes. And if I slow down a little bit, actually, no. It's not in this person. Do you see what I mean? So we can see, oh, integrity just arose, you know? So we're clarifying. The point I was making is it's not personal in this way. That's extremely healthy way to go about studying body, vedana, mind states, you know, to discover the behavior of mind, heart, body outside of a view that is selfing, you know, that's just making everything more complex and confused. So we can leave this aside temporarily. You know, we're not disappearing. It's not about this. It's a little bit like, you know, one teacher was saying, I think Mingyur Rinpoche was saying, you know, when I talk about this in Buddhist terms, people get uneasy. If I talk about it in neurological terms, people are really at ease, you know. Oh, it's the fight and flight that kicks in. It's not you, it's your brain, you know. Okay, it's my brain, you know. Well, it's the same thing I'm saying here, you know. We're studying the behavior of you know, the human nature, you know. And so that's an extremely helpful point here. And you can see it. It can be applied anywhere. It's going to be helpful, you know. You know, you know, today I was, first I chose the biggest cake in the tray. I was really lucky because it was the first one. So if anyone was watching, I really looked like I was taking the first one, very humbly, simply, and it was the biggest. But then the problem I had was with the, cloudy, you know, don't pretend, the whipped cream, you know, so with the whipped cream, oh my God, he's so superficial. With the whipped cream, suddenly, I had an ethical problem, because, you know, it's hard to gauge, you know, what is a right portion for 42 people when you're the first one, you know? And what's acceptable when you're going to walk by yogis and you're in a teacher role? The equation is pretty complex. So it takes a lot of mindfulness to get the most. And so this could be taken really personally, like, oh my God, you're so superficial, you're so greedy. It's like, and it could also be taken different. Look at that, a human mind. Do I really care so much about, I don't even remember the name of this thing?
Whipped cream.
Whipped cream. You know, actually right now, apparently yes. You know, that's the nature of clinging. It seems like my life depends on this momentarily, you know. And I know for you it's much more noble, you know, the way it shows up in your life, you know. But, you know, taking it not personally is extremely helpful. Look at that. Minds. Amazing. 20 years of practice. You know, overpowered by the powerless. Give it the bowl of, what is it again? Am I going to learn?
Whipped cream.
You know, give it a, you know, a powerless bowl of whipped cream, and this mind is overpowered. This description is 1,500 years old. You know, overpowered by the powerless. For you, maybe it's not whipped cream, but it might be just a passing thought that crosses the mind, and suddenly, half a day of struggle, you know, with the thought, against the thought, you know, instead of just recognizing, oh, look at what arises, or more poignant, a mood, an emotion, you know, that will grab us if the thought didn't, you know, partly because it seems like it's happening to me. How can you even question that? You know? So in the practice, we're bringing really, really close attention. And at some point in the development of practice, so in the mood, there is the sensations related to the mood, contraction, expansion, lightness, heaviness, you know, anything else that you'll experience, you know, tension or electricity, acidity, there's so much, many ways that emotions show, moods, ambiance in the mind, perception, how it alters. You know, when I was grumpy, suddenly the lovely meditators, thank you so much everybody for creating these conditions to practice, suddenly in grumpiness, you're a bunch of annoying people. You know? That's the power of mind states. They will alter perceptions. And if we give into it, we will totally believe that, you know? I don't know if I can find this one. You know, hearing the it makes me think of selfing. You know, before, when people didn't know better, they would say like, oh, the gods are angry. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're angry, you know. They would personify, you know, they would. And so here we do this with meteorology, inner meteorology. And later, maybe we'll find it cute, you know. Later in our own practice, or later when we're all awake, you know, whatever, we'll go like, oh, people used to make this very personal, you know. They didn't know how things were caused in the same way that weather is caused by different conditions, you know, that they arise and pass, you know. They didn't know, you know, to actually take care of meteorology, you know, inwardly or outwardly. So this would be the Buddha here. All experiences is preceded by mind, or mind states, if you want to hear this. Led by mind, by mind states. Made by mind, mind states. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering with suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experiences is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind, mind states. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows, like a never departing shadow. All experiences, so this is what I'm saying here, we perceive reality. It's not reality that we get to understand what reality is we're projecting on past, future, self, others, our mind states. It's preceded by mind states. It's the other way around, maybe, or at least really worth investigating this. Do you see how at least it could apply here or there? You know, it's not people who are like this. It's the mind that is like this right now, and that creates the immediate world in which I am right now, you know? And so, let's throw this there as an hypothesis, as an element for research, you know? Here, as we're here today and in the next days, could I see this in action, you know, at some point, you know? Is the whipped cream really desirable? Or is reality preceded by mind? Mind making whipped cream totally, ultimately satisfying, you know, in its confusion. Do you see what I mean? And suddenly I get to have it and move out of my way and I'm going to defend my whipped cream, whatever, you know, dot, 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 replace it by whatever you want, you know? And so the mind states project on things. We've seen this, you know, we've projected satisfaction into many, many things, you know, to find out that, you know, this retreat, can't wait for this retreat to be over. It appeared in a certain way and then it appears in a different way, you know. And knowing this is extremely freeing because we don't have to believe completely. We can attend, you know, maybe both inwardly and outwardly, you know, attend. Maybe relax. Oh, it's a passing way, you know, something. Maybe if I apply care and, you know, bring a balanced mind in this, maybe it will alter the perception. And a different understanding might arise, you know. And so where I was going with this is, so in the mind state there are maybe sensations that we might recognize or maybe know. There might be a mood inside, there might be a way that things are perceived. The other is perceived as an enemy. That might be an indication of something going on inside. So might be in the way of perception. And there's something happening in the middle of all this that is about the last thing on our radar, probably not even in our radar, but that in practice we bring right in the middle, we give value to, is the aspect of knowing all this. There's something that knows all this, that experiences the contraction, that experiences the mood, that experiences the thoughts. This, you know, has not many features in a way, huh? Because the contraction has the feature of contraction, right? And unpleasantness has the features of being really unpleasant. It stands out. Of course we'll focus on this. And the fact that, you know, the future looks bleak, it's very compelling, so I'll focus on that. In the meantime, at the same time, while this is happening, there's something amazing happening. There's a knowing quality. There's something that is just revealing, reflecting. Sometimes it's presented as a mirror. It reflects. You know, it reflects, oh, look, painful. Oh, look, You know, when we use this image of the mirror, it's talking about the fact that the mirror, if it reflects something that is ugly, you know, or dirt, it's not dirty. The mirror, it's reflecting this, so it's in a way untouched. And so there's this happening as we're sitting here miserable, if it happens to be like this. You know, there's something that is experiencing misery that might not be miserable. And this is where the confusion could be. Because if this knowing, I mistakenly, naturally, conditionally, habitually took as moi, then I might take very personal what's happening. But if I discover that it's a function of mine, knowing is a function of mine, it's not me, but it's there, it might start to appear as a refuge. And in a way, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about mindfulness. Huh? We're saying, can there be something that just recognizes what is there, feels? It's not removed, it's inside. Another image that is used is water coming, maybe hitting a rock. You know, it's going to go all around the contour, really feel the thing. And if it's a sponge, it's going to go inside and feel. And so mindfulness in this way come really, really close, inside moods, and inside pleasure or displeasure, or boredom, or freshness, or staleness, whatever happens to, it goes inside and it reveals it, it experiences it. And maybe in there's something we haven't had the chance to recognize, because maybe different people talk about it differently. Maybe because subtle, maybe because having no color, no shape, no form, it just knows. And because it has no form, it can reveal either, you know, throbbing in the knee, or sweetness, or freshness, you know. That's because it doesn't have so many features, it can actually kind of take the form or reveal or go inside whatever image you want to use, you know. And so that quality of mind here we put at the center. We say, yes, there is all this turmoil, but there's a knowing of the turmoil. There's the sounds, but the hearing, the knowing of the sound. And so we can maybe here today make a link between mindfulness and this, you know, a highlighting of the function of consciousness, of knowing. And in there, maybe we can find that we can be in the middle of things, and there's a knowing that happens, and kind of focus on that part of the experience, not so much the unpleasantness, but the thing that encounters it. There's something that encounters it. The reactivity is something else, is an activity of mind. I don't like unpleasantness, because it can also be known, the reactivity. Do you see a little bit what I'm meaning? I'm kind of pointing out here in the best way that I can. Then it's for us to go and see. You know, there is something, there is the sound of the rain, but there is something that knows it, that reveals it. We might say it's me, but it's also just a function of mine. We could present it this way, we can perceive it differently. And this knowing is not the rain, is not the sound. It reveals it. Do you see how it's kind of untouched? So we try with the rain, with the thunder, and then with the uneasiness. Well, we raise the bar a little bit. Can uneasiness be known? You know? And then we discover, the uneasiness can be known. if it's me who's uneasy and knowing the uneasiness and, you know, victim of the uneasiness, or however it's kind of perceived, even if it's without words, you know, that's really uncomfortable easiness. We don't want, of course we want to push right away. But if it's something that is known, an event that is known by the mind, there's uneasiness, it's an event, and it's known by the mind, neither of them are me. Then maybe something can relax inside and allow for knowing to happen. You know, for discomfort to be there, for beauty to be there. You know? If there's no me in the knowing of beauty, you know, there's just beauty and beauty being revealed, who's going to cling? No one will cling. I want to keep it. No. There's beauty and the knowing of beauty. In a way, this is maybe my a little bit gauche way, in my it's a way to talk about freedom, right? But that's words. So now I try to find something to end well. Might not succeed. And a few really powerful quotes here. Tiens, here's the end of this. I saw from the Buddha, whatever is not yours, abandon it. Meaning maybe don't cling to it. Don't try to possess it, appropriate it. So I'll start again here. Whatever is not yours, abandon it. What is it that is not yours? Material form? Feeling? Perceptions, formations, consciousness, these are not yours. When you have abandoned them, that will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. So let's take just a moment here. Allowing the form to totally be there and be known. The form. Experienced through pressure. Expansions, contractions. Dryness or wetness. Freshness or warmth. This belongs to the universe. Let's see if we can, at least for a moment, not possess this, not appropriate these passing sensations. Allow them to be there. And if your eyes are closed and there's an image of the room or of the body there, allow that perception, that mirage, to be there fully, be known. But don't make it you, yours. It's just something that happens naturally. Kind of perception of the environment. And if this experience here is pleasant or unpleasant, for any reason, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, see if you can allow this experience of pleasantness to exist, as many things appear and disappear in the world and can be known, sound of cars or birds and feeling tones. Can these arise, be present and change without grasping, appropriating, making mine? Could even the knowing of the breath, of the light, be an event truly happening? The knowing of a thought or a mood, an ambiance, maybe it's quiet in there or confused. Tender or numb or shut down or light. Could that state of mind or mood just be allowed to pass, like the rain, the sounds of the rain or thunder is allowed to exist for a moment? Not be appropriated or identified with. May we find great freedom. May there be great freedom in the middle of all the arisings and passings. May they lead to care and joy and compassion and peace. Thank you so much for considering these thoughts. I hope something in there is helpful. As a community, I would like to remind us that we were invited. I think we kind of we were invited, and we sometimes the words in English lack. We were invited, and we agreed. Maybe to let go of the use of scent and the products that we use for maybe skincare or hair care or, you know, things like this. So I would like to invite you to take a second look at what you're using and really practice renunciation. It might be unpleasant for you to let go of something because you're not sure if it has scents or you really are attached to using it daily. But take personally, each one of us, let's take a second look at what our behavior during the day and the products we use. And is there something we could let go in order to create more ease and safety in the room? And that might not be our personal experience, that we're touched by smell like this. We might not smell or find it lovely or not be bothered by it. Some of us will feel a neurological impact, maybe, or breathing, respiratory impact with these some of these chemicals. And some are natural, they're essential oils, and that might have the same effect. So, kind of, again, inviting us to really bring mindfulness to this, care, and go out of our way, you know, in a way, and not fall into kind of paranoia and guilt tripping, and you know, not this, but skillfully look at what could be let go of, that could be useful for someone else. Okay. Thank you very much for attending to this. A bon appetite.